Hello and welcome to this week's No Name Ever podcast. I'm James Byrne, I'll be hosting this week and I'm joined, as always, by Natalie Bromley. We're going to be discussing the 2-1 win against West Brom. Nice to get back to winning ways when we're back playing football, which is nice. Obviously, good win against West Ham last time out. I wasn't on that podcast, if you haven't listened yet. We did do an all-ladies podcast. It's well worth a listen if you can check that out on our website. I'd say the biggest thing to take away, Natalie, here is it's just nice to get a result at the Hawthorns, because every time we've been there previously, we've put in possibly our worst performance of that respective season away from home. What did you think of the game?
Well, I'm not quite sure how to react, really. As the results were coming in, I was thinking, I'm sorry, we're winning at the Hawthorns. What is this sorcery? But obviously, yeah, I agree with you, James. It was a very, very well-earned win, and it's about flipping time, isn't it? I think your dad put it on Twitter, actually. I think the last time that we won at the Hawthorns, neither of us were alive. So was it like 1967 or something ridiculous like that? I think it was a long time ago anyway. So massively delighted to get that hoodoo off our backs. And I think it was going to be the season, wasn't it, that we were going to do it. I think we'd run into a situation where West Brom were, well, they're gone now, aren't they? I think that was their last chance saloon on Saturday. And we're just breaking every single stereotype and every single, I guess, unwanted stereotype about Burnley this season. So it just seemed written on the cards that this would be the season that we would win. Good game as well, actually. A little bit of a dip in performance levels, I think, in the second half, but no doubt we'll come on to talk about that later on. I'm not entirely sure we maintain the same level of intensity and technical ability throughout the full 90 minutes. But you know what? You don't need to. You know, as long as you ride the dips in games, you know, competently. And Dyche has talked about this before. He's talked about when this team's under pressure and when they are suffering from a little bit of loss of form, just to do the key things and the basic things well, just to keep them in the game. And as long as we do that, and then obviously take our chances when we get them, then
as you said there,
happy days.
Amazing to get a result at last at the Hawthorns. It definitely has been a long time. I can't remember exactly how many years ago it was. But we, in the first half in particular, I thought we were excellent. We'll start at the very top of the game. Dyche made some lineup changes, which is pretty rare for him. He normally likes to stay with the same team, but he did something that a lot of fans have been asking for quite a while now, in dropping Hendrick and obviously giving Wood the opportunity to start. Wood's really impressed up front, I think, with Barnes in the last couple of substitute appearances. Obviously grabbed himself a couple of goals, and the two of them together have looked like quite a threat, and we've looked like scoring more goals than we have all season, to be honest, when the two are together. Goodmanson also missed out due to injury. So it was an opportunity for GK to come into the side. We've not seen him in a little while. We've maybe not seen as much as we would have expected due to the fact, obviously, we signed Aaron Lennon as well. But I think both wingers had great games. And it's interesting to see how many good wingers there now are in our side. Natalie, were you pleased to see the changes that were made? And do you think that should be sort of the lineup to end the season on for the final running?
Yes. we've all talked, haven't we? I think you and I have talked about this, and we talked about it last week as well. The fact that once Brady became injured and then Defoe as well, 4-5-1 just wasn't working for us. We were struggling to get any form of supply up to Ashley Barnes, and we didn't look like a side that were going to score any goals. We only ever really looked like we had one goal in us. As the recent games, I think once we got that 11-game unwinning streak behind us, and we got to 40 points, we started to play with a bit more freedom and a bit more relaxed. Every single time Dyche brought Wood on and played him up front with Barnes and went to 4-4-2, we actually looked, like you say, James, really, really threatening. And I haven't seen that level of attacking threat for quite some time. I mean, let's be honest, Dyche's teams aren't famous for being fast, direct, well, not direct, but fast and attacking and, you know, scoring plenty of goals. He very much works from the back, keeps it very disciplined in defence and takes chances as and when they come to him. So I guess my only element of surprise was that he actually went for it from the beginning. I'd kind of expected that he would fall into the routine of starting 4-5-1 and keeping a little bit of discipline and shape to the side and just keeping in the game, and then bring Wood on as an impact player and switch to 4-4-2 in the sort of early stages of the second half to push on and try and find the goals that are needed. But, you know, credit to him. He went from the start. And you know what? There's no reason to. I think this sounds really awful from a West Brom perspective, but we were playing bottom of the league in a side that had just lost seven games back to back. Pardew's had zero impact, and obviously he's now gone as well. Zero impact. They've sacked two managers this season. And we were away from home, and actually nobody expected us to win, weirdly, because of this strange record we've got at the Hawthorns. So why not go for it? I really want to see Dyche throw caution to the wind the rest of this season now and just play with a little bit of freedom and experiment with a few players and just go for it, because we've got an opportunity for European football potentially this season. And why would you not try and take that opportunity?
Very true. So to move on to the goals, so you've just been saying about how when Barnes and Wood have both been in the side, we've looked more threatening and there's been more goals. Well, both scored again on Saturday. And Barnes's was something really special. I think Ashley Barnes has sort of come into his own a little bit this season. Previously, he's been the type of player who maybe comes up with a big goal every now and then. He can never fault his work rate. But I think he's added a bit more consistency in scoring, particularly of late, to his game this season. He's looking the best he's ever played, I think. And he's just pulled out one of the finishers of the season from a striker in the 18-yard box. From his own interviews after, I'm not sure he expected it to come off as it did, but it came off and it was quite spectacular, and I'm sure he's probably still watching it now, actually, to be honest. It was that good. What did you think of the goal? And the other key thing I think to mention about it is a great little bit of build-up as well from us, and a good cross from Aaron Lennon, which is something that I think we said earlier in the season, we're really lacking crosses getting to people who were available to do something with them.
Yeah, definitely. I think Lennon's just getting better and better every single game, isn't he? I think it took him a couple of games to maybe settle into the side a little bit. I think there were a couple of home fixtures where I wasn't as impressed as maybe I thought I was going to be. And, what are we like as fans? We sign players of Lennon's quality for the first time, I think, ever. And, you know, I can't believe we're actually in a position where we're signing players like Aaron Lennon. And then you just want them to be a magician on the pitch straight away, don't you? And it doesn't happen that way. We're very impatient as fans, I think. But certainly in the last couple of games, I've really seen him. I think he started the West Ham game, I think, he had a really good game there. And on Saturday again, he was just really good. He's also playing with a little bit of freedom as well. And he's just got that pace that we're sadly lacking in. It's just so lovely to see. So, yeah, the build-up play for the goal was fantastic, and it was a really great cross. It reminded me very much of the days where we used to have Trippier being able to put balls like that into the box. Obviously, you know, he's not a defender, isn't Lennon, but he has still got that ability to whip balls in, and it was that kind of skill, and it was that kind of accuracy just to put it where he wanted in the box and beat his defender as well. It was really good. But the absolute credit and the whole everything about that goal was young Ashley. It's really funny, actually, because as we're recording this, I in my office when we record the podcast, I have the Burnley 2018 calendar in front of me, and obviously it was the 1st of April over the weekend, so April is Ashley Barnes, which I thought was very fitting, but also Dean Marnie. I think that might be the greatest Burnley calendar feature ever. Dean Marnie and Ashley Barnes. So anyway, that's just a little interlude for the listeners. Get April on your calendars if you've got them. But yes, Ashley Barnes, I am absolutely delighted for him for the season that he's had this year. I have never seen him play like he has this season. And it feels like he's developing into actually the technical footballer that we didn't really think he was. We've always had a lovable rogue relationship with Ashley Barnes. We always used to joke about him jumping up all arms and legs and all jumping around and you know, knocking people over. And it's just clumsy Ashley. And he's always been really good for disrupting play for us and trying to get us free kicks. But, and then, like you say, James, just popping up with an important goal there and then. But this season hasn't been like that for Ashley. It's been there's been a calmness to his game, and there's been a thought process, and he's been cleverer in his play, and he's put himself in positions that he maybe wouldn't have seen before. And obviously a lot of that is down to the training and development, and he's had to step up this season and take the responsibility for the main scorer with the injuries that we've had. And so obviously the backroom staff are going to be really working hard with him. But I think the biggest thing for me on Saturday was just the audacity to just try it. Like, how much confidence has Ashley Barnes got at the moment that he thought in his head, you know what, I know what I'm going to do here. I'm going to try a little overhead bicycle kick because that's the angle that I've got. And yeah, like you say, I don't think he expected it to go in, but when it does, they are so spectacular and they're a fan favourite, aren't they? So I love it. And we've always got gripes, haven't we? It's really bad, but it's just so frustrating that we've had quite a few goals this season that if they'd been scored by one of the top six, if Kane had scored it or De Bruyne had scored it, they'd have been on repeat every half an hour through Sky Sports News. They'd have been on every single channel. We'd have been at it rammed down our throats for an entire weekend. And because it's not one of the top six, I'm not just saying it's just Burnley, I think all of the sides outside of the top six get this treatment. We see it once and everybody's like, oh my God, look at this spectacular goal. That's you'll not see a better goal than that this season. And then the sort of post-match media is all finished and we don't see it again. So I'd like to see us start next season in our third consecutive league. Just if we do manage to finish seventh and we do start well again next season, and we do sign well in the summer, I'd just like us to start getting a little bit more credit for what we're doing and what we're doing well.
Just to quickly go back to something you mentioned right at the beginning of your point there, actually, Natalie. Aaron Lennon, the first couple of games, I think we were playing him on the left-hand side, which meant anyone who's seen much of Lennon's career knows Lennon much prefers playing on the right. And I think since we've moved him to the right-hand side against his former team, Everton, you know, we've seen that really pay off. And it'll be interesting to see whether Dash sticks with that going forward now. I think he will. I think he's seen just how good Lennon can be playing on the right for us. And we really benefit from it. And to think we've got a player of, you know, that sort of class. I know he's maybe on the decline in his career, but he's still an immensely talented player. And, you know, he's still more than capable of playing at that mid to top level of the Premier League, right where we are at the moment, which is probably higher than any of us ever expected we'd see Burnley, to be honest, if you rewind 10 years. So it's quite special, I think, to see a player of his class. And probably the first real player we've signed who's been at one of the sort of top sides for a good amount of his career, who we haven't signed when he's sort of on the way out, like Ian Wright or Paul Gascoigne, to rewind to the 90s. So yeah, really good goal obviously there from Ashley Barnes for the first one. Wood adds a bit more of a workmanlike second, but I think after that, we did something that Burnley have been guilty of many times this season, maybe, and we took our foot off the gas a little bit. Luckily, West Brom look a shadow of the team they should be this season, and they weren't really able to capitalise on that, only getting a consolation goal. But do you think it's a little bit concerning that we don't always keep pressing right to the end of the game and, you know, keep up that attacking intent that we were showing, particularly in the first half, Natalie?
Yes and no. I think I touched on this a little bit in the opening sections of this podcast. And, I expressed slight frustration that we didn't keep up the tempo and we didn't keep up the technical awareness all the way through the game. But then, you know what, unless you're Man City in this current season, not many sides do. I mean, it's quite a big ask to perform at that level for a full 90 minutes. My general frustration with Burnley towards the end of games is this side does have a tendency, and I've got to admit it's been reduced a lot recently, but it has a tendency to sit back and defend for its lives in the last 10, 15 minutes of a game. If it's, you know, if they've got the noses in front, they'll really try and see the game out. And that's always dangerous in this league because, as we've all seen, they can be very susceptible to conceding very late goals and losing points or dropping points where they shouldn't do. I feel like that's been eliminated quite a bit from the latter part of this season. I don't feel like we're doing it as much. But I do also think as well that we are getting a lot better at reacting to conceding goals. But we still have that slight nervousness about it. Now, if we apply this to the game on Saturday, I think the goal that we did concede was just kind of unfortunate, really. If you look at the build-up to the play, we just lost Stephen Ward down to an injury. He got himself down. And because it wasn't a head injury, the game wasn't stopped, which I've got no grouts with. That's the rules. Nobody kicked the ball out because, you know, the West Brom were on the attack. Why would they? We wouldn't do the same either. And it's really obvious. And I think if you look at all the commentary, people who are watching the game tend to agree. We were just caught out of shape and we were just caught a little bit unawares because we were a man down in defence. And that Burnley defence relies very heavily on a very solid back four that it all moves as one in one unit and it very rarely goes. So when one of them's down, you know, 30 yards up the pitch with an injury, it just caught us out of sorts. Now, when that goal goes in, you know, it just gives them a 10-minute spell, West Brom, to think they're fighting for their lives in relegation zone. Oh, we might be able to get something here. So I think if we hadn't have conceded that goal, I think we would have just seen the game out quite comfortably and we maybe wouldn't have been having this discussion on this podcast this week. But I think because we lost the goal and we just lost a little bit of organisation in the side, I think just for a couple of minutes, everybody just lost their confidence a little bit. I think that's maybe fair to say. And everybody just thought a bit, oh no, you know, plus the hoodoo of it being the Hawthorns as well, you know, are we going to concede another one here and lose 3 points? But it was only for a moment, so I'm not too concerned with that. So that's sort of the end stages of the game. I have noticed as well, and this is what I was alluding to at the beginning of the podcast, this side doesn't always, very rarely has a full 90 minutes performance in them at the levels that are really good. So it tends to either be, we've seen a really, really poor first half where it's just been absolutely shocking. West Ham, again, being a classic example. I don't know how we went into that game at 0-0 at half-time. We were really out of sorts in that first half, but then came back in the second half and buried the game. Or, as it was on Saturday, a very, very strong first half performance. And to be fair, relatively strong throughout most of the second half. But again, maybe a 25-minute spell where things just the intensity dropped a little bit and the focus dropped a little bit. Can I just put a quick interlude in here? I'm not suggesting for 1 minute, listeners, before you all start tweeting me, that this was a poor performance. I'm just saying if we look at it as a sliding scale, there was a dip in the second half. Now, what I sort of mentioned at the beginning of this podcast is that actually, when you're not one of the top six sides with absolute machine athletes running around and ridiculous like £60 million players on the bench to bring on to rest other players, very few teams are able to maintain that intensity throughout 90 minutes. So as long as when we're in that dip, we maintain the focus and we understand what we're doing. And as Deitch says, we do the basic stuff well and competently and we don't lose our heads, then that's fine. You know, you can afford that dip of intensity as long as you defend and then you can obviously ramp it back up again to get you over the line. And I'm starting to see that. I'm starting to see that in the dips where this Burnley side are just, you know, whichever half it is, they are still performing really competently. It's just, I guess, as a fan, slightly frustrating because you want to be entertained for 90 minutes and you want to see Lennon firing down the wing and putting balls and you want Ashley Barnes to be scissor kicking 3 times into the back of the net. But the reality is that it's not the league to do that unless you're one of the top six sides. So yes, it's there. Yes, it will get better as each season we spend in the Premier League and as our players get fitter and be better and we get sort of better athletes and better technical players. But let's not run before we can walk. We're doing really, really well. And I'm really interested to see how that plays next season, to be honest.
Yes, some really interesting points there about sort of our consistency. I think what's interesting to note, though, is actually in the last couple of games where it's maybe been the first half, we've not been at our best. Obviously, we've made the changes that we started Saturday's game with. And I think that shows that it's maybe taken a little while, but you know, Dyche has given the players who finished some of those games the opportunity to show if they can do it from the start. And I think the resounding answer was, you know, yes, they could, but there's still maybe a little bit of tweaking needed to get a full 90 minutes out of the side, which, you know, you get three substitutions for a reason. You may as well take advantage of them and use them well. I think, as we've said already, West Brom inevitably going down to the Championship. They've had an awful season. I think they started out quite promising, actually. Their win at Turf Moor was their second of the season at that point. And who would have thought that they'd only win once more since at the time. There's been a lot of fans talking over the last couple of days about should we sign anyone from the teams going down. Obviously, at the moment, there's only one team you can say for certain are probably going to go down, and that's West Brom. Personally, I know some people say, oh, bring Jay back, bring Jay home. I don't think Jay Rodriguez is necessarily the player he was, and I don't think he's necessarily the fit for our team either, which is maybe the most important point. And if I was to say there's maybe one player from West Brom I'd take, maybe Rondon. I feel like he's maybe a slightly more established version of Ashley Barnes, but obviously with the way Ashley Barnes has played this season, if he could get any better next year, he's going to be one hell of a striker. So it's a tough one. Is there anyone that, you know, from the times you've seen West Brom or from, you know, previous performances of other teams, is there anyone in West Brom side that you'd be interested in taking a look at when the vultures start picking at the bones when they go down?
How nice that we're in that position as well, though, that we can start circulating. That usually happens to us. We usually get to this point in the season and we start panicking about who we're going to lose when we go down. I've kind of got my eye on three West Brom players. I'll start with Jay because you've already mentioned that, James, and I think the other two kind of are two different positions that we can talk about. I had some healthy debates on Twitter over the weekend about this very point, and I agree with you. I personally wouldn't bring him back. And I think, which is quite interesting, really, because it just seems to show how the tide has turned, doesn't it? Because I think 3 years ago, I literally would have snapped their hands off to bring Jay home. But we've moved on now. And I look at Jay and, well, my initial reaction when I tweeted about this was that I agree with you. I don't think he has lived up to the potential that we thought he would do. Now, a lot of that is just because he's been really unlucky with injury. But my perception of Jay is that he is injury prone, and I'd be concerned about his injury record. And I was corrected quite rightly a couple of times by people on Twitter for this, and I'm glad they did, because it just goes to show what your perception of players can be as opposed to the reality. In that apparently Jay's only actually had one injury since he left us, and that was the, was it cruciate that he did? And unfortunately, when he was on his way back, literally very close to fitness again, he got an infection in the wound and really, really set him back. So it's quite harsh from me, I think, to label him as a crook, as obviously the affectionate term for it, when that's potentially not the case. But that was certainly my initial perception. So I'm quite happy to put that to one side for now, in that that might just be misguided perception of a player and not the truth. We've got to look at the strikers that we've got. I'm going to assume that Walters and Wells will maybe move on at the end of the season, which leaves us back with Wood, Barnes and Vaux. Now, I think I'm putting Vaux in the vulnerable category here. I'm not entirely sure how much longer he's going to be happy sat on the bench, literally getting, he's hardly had much game time at all this season. But I think, let's think that Walters and Wells will probably move on. Yes, we do need backup up front. I guess while I've been thinking about this, I might have tucked myself back around the other way. My initial reaction is with you, James. I would prefer Rondon. And I've been saying all season when West Brom have been struggling, I've been saying to anybody who listened that I would love to take him if they do go down. But like you say, he's very similar to a Barnes character. So how do we fit that into the side? Because Rondon's not going to come to us and sit on the bench either. He'll go somewhere else where he'll be first choice. But it's either or. But how can you, you know, how can you drop Barnes if he carries on next season the way he's playing this season? We're better with Barnes, with what we know. So in that sense, maybe we can flip it back and say, well, Jay gives a better number 10 option, like a I guess a more natural number 10 and a more talented number 10 than Wells or Walters gave as backup. So I kind of started this segment thinking, oh no, I'd rather have Rondon. But now I'm thinking, well, maybe Jay would fit better. So actually, why can't we just have both? If we just signed Jay and Rondon, Wells and Walters go, and that'd be a great strike force, wouldn't it, those five? So yeah, let's go with that. So I'm going to be the greedy brat that I am. For those people who follow me regular on Twitter will know that I am a brat. So I'm going to be greedy and say I want J-Rod and I want Rondon. The other rumour that's going around is at the other end of the pitch, and this is gathering a lot of momentum on Twitter, in that apparently Dyche is going to come back in for Craig Dawson. He's apparently supposed to be a versatile defender, which we all know means can effectively play wherever you want on the back. And we all know how much Sean Dyche loves a versatile player. If you can play in more than one position, you're like gold, and little Sean Dyche's eyes light up when he sees you. So, I like Dawson. I think he's a good solid defender, and I think he's got quite a decent bit of pace about him. So, I don't mind that signing. I guess my only hesitancy with Dawson would be he's predominantly right back, I believe. I'm not really sure we need cover in that area unless he's planning on getting rid of Bardsley. And again, I'm not entirely sure whether Dawson would come because Matt Lawton has to be first choice right back. He's had a fantastic season. And James, you and I, aren't we? We've talked many a times about our frustration about how long Bardsley kept him out the side for. And again, another solid performance from him. So they're the only three that I would potentially look at. Get all three of them, why not?
Cracky, you're getting a bit greedy. You know, there's three teams that are going to go down that way, so there's plenty of other bones to pick at before we settle on who we'd like. And obviously plenty of teams in the Championship who might have some good players who might want to move on. Just following on from your point there about us being rich then, the accounts obviously were released since we last sat down to the podcast. And what a story that is for us compared to, you know, a few years ago. A net profit of $22.2 million for the financial year ending June 2017. Quite sensational, really, when you look at what we've managed to achieve on the pitch in that time as well. We've also increased our spending massively compared to what we did previously. I even saw one fan complain, I think it was on a message board, that our increase in wages was troubling, though it was still way below turnover, which is quite rare for a Premier League side. So it's going to be interesting to see what next year's accounts show with some of the signings we've made. But obviously, we've made big signings over this period that's covered in these accounts. It's quite impressive just to see really how financially healthy the club is at the moment. And obviously, with a potential 6th, 7th or 8th finishing position from this season, the money from the Premier League this year is going to be quite impressive. So it's going to be interesting to see the next accounts. Natalie, just, you know, from that, the only thing to really read into it is that headline figure. What was your reaction seeing that?
Very pleased, obviously. It's I think the main thing that struck me at first was just the actual profit. Well, what was the profit? It was the turnover. What was the turnover figure? Hang on, I've lost it again. I'm reading this. 1 second. 121 million, yeah. Sorry, listeners, I was trying to multitask and failed then. That's quite a figure, and that is... Surely that must be the most money Burnley Football Club's ever made in a year in terms of turnover, surely. But yeah, I think that was what grabbed me when I first read it. I was like, oh my God, how did we... Although interestingly, it's quite interesting to see just, you know, 95 million of that comes from one source. So as with most Burnley fans, I do always have that ingrained worry inside me that if anything happens to the Premier League or these revenue rights go down or something goes wrong... That's a massive void. It just worries me a little bit that the Premier League, as a general rule, has all of its eggs in one broadcaster basket.
I think that's a worry, obviously, for every team in the league. There's some teams, obviously, that have been purchased on mountains of debt that I think, obviously, will be an even more precarious position than we are. It doesn't really bear thinking about if the market, the bottom part of the market for football, TV rights,
yeah,
it's quite
advertising, a lot of it.
Yeah, it's impressive that, to be honest, the league's managed to get itself into a position where it is so dependent on almost a monopoly, really, a duopoly, for want of a better term, of BT and Sky in the home market. And I think, with people streaming these days, it is going to change over the next couple of years. They're going to have to change it because Sky and BT are going to see, obviously, the exclusivity of that challenged by people using other means to see games. And I think they're going to have to radically overhaul the delivery of football TV coverage. So it's going to be interesting to see where it goes and what that means for the financial side. But certainly at the moment, the bubble doesn't seem like it's about to burst.
No, and I think we need to kind of not worry about that, don't we? We need to just carry on, because you can only really, I guess, plan season by season. I think football is quite an interesting business, and I suspect it's probably quite unique in that you can have your 5-year plans, you can have your 10-year plans, you can look at long-term financial goals and developments and things like that. But essentially, your entire business plan has to change every single May, because you have no idea what your income's going to be. You can have a general idea, as in if we go down to this league, we're going to be around this figure. But you've got to set up all of your financial affairs and your contracts and everything with almost two different goalposts. That's a terrible analogy, given this is a football podcast, but you know what I mean? It's like, and I think Burnley have done really well at doing that. We know that Burnley have, especially this year, had one of the lowest wage budgets, but have ended up spending a good chunk of their money on player incentives, which we can all assume is a bonus for maintaining their position in the Premier League. And as time goes on, maybe we'll see, and I think Garlick probably alluded to this, is that maybe we'll see a slightly the scales slightly tipping back towards a more balanced view, so we can actually pay more as a weekly wage for these players, with the incentives going down a little bit, just to attract that better quality of player and just to get us more stable and like you say, a long-term Premier League club. I'm sorry, listeners, I appear to be having a small episode where I've lost the ability to speak, so hopefully you picked up on all of that.
Yeah, so I think in short, the takeaway from that is fantastic news. I'm going to be interested to see how we push on from there, and obviously, hopefully, continue to use the money wisely. I think we've seen we've invested a lot in infrastructure, and I think as long as we continue doing that, making wise purchases for the playing side, and hopefully keeping hold of Sean Dash, then we should see a great period of long term stability, to be honest, for the club. Moving back to the football side of things, a lot of people talking about Europe, and as I've said before on the podcast, I'm as great as Europe will be as a fan. I think for the playing side, it's maybe a distraction that we might not want, having had such a good season that was maybe unexpected, particularly to people outside of Burnley, to then have the added pressure of all the extra games that Europe can bring. So I'd rather focus rather on the race for Europe, the race for sixth, and can we catch Arsenal? Personally, I'm very hopeful. I put a couple of quid on quite a while ago at 25-1 that we would. It's looking like Arsenal are back to maybe getting the rub of the green a little and getting some results. But obviously, we still do have to go to the Emirates. And with the way we've been away this season, anything could happen.
This is so exciting, James.
It is. Now, do you fancy us to maybe cause a big upset and dislodge Arsenal from the top six?
Oh my God, I can't even believe I'm going to say this, but yes, why not? No, I don't know. My crazy carried away Burnley brain that goes, oh my God, we're going to get six, is saying yes, let's do it. We can turn over Arsenal, we can beat Leicester, we can win all of our games and take sixth. The reality of the situation is that it's not in our hands, and Arsenal have proven for many, many seasons that no matter what, where they find themselves in, they can see out the end of a season to get where they need to be. You know, where they've had a weaker season, how many seasons did they manage to just sneak their way into that fourth spot, or even though everybody thought that they wouldn't make top six? And, you know, I know this current Arsenal side is struggling a little bit, and they didn't make it last year, but they've still got a lot more experience of closing out a season than we do. Plus, they're already in that position as well, and they've got to play us at the Emirates. So I think six is a big ask. If we beat Arsenal and we beat Leicester, then I'll get excited. But I just think that might just be a stretch too far. The top six are top six for a reason, and they very, very rarely get dislodged from that, apart from, you know, the odd weird season where like Chelsea or United will have a shocker and fall out. But, you know, they've consistently those top six sides for a long time now. So I think seventh is probably the best we can hope for. And actually, it's going to be difficult enough to get that seventh spot, to be honest. Never mind going for sixth. I mean, six would be great if we're going to go into Europe, because then we can get rid of all of those pre-qualifying games that we don't need to play and just go straight into the group stages, can't we? Just picking up on what you said there, actually, James, about unwelcome distraction and number of games, I genuinely want us to go for this. And I'm really worried that Dyche is just not feeling it as much as we are. And he came out after the West Brom game again and said, you know, European football, be careful what you wish for. And he's just not filling me with confidence at all that he wants that. And I think that's for two reasons. I think legitimately he will have some concerns over stretching this side and resources. And that's a perfectly legitimate concern. I think he's very, very sensible at the helm of our club, and I wouldn't swap him for the world. It's, you know, he's very good at keeping us grounded and knowing what we need. But also from a managerial style, we all know how much Dyche loves us to be the underdog. He gets very uncomfortable in interviews if you watch him. If Burnley, like when we went into fourth or when we were surviving and, you know, people saying, are you going to go for top six? He's very, very, very quick to slap the reporter down and be like, oh, no, we're not this, we're not claiming to be anything else. And we've never once heard him say, actually, we've played really well this season, we deserve to be where we are, and we are really going to push on now for Europe. It's just not his style, and that's fair enough. He will always say, do we think we're the finished article? No, we don't. Do we think we're a side that's progressing? Yes, we are. You know, he's so keen on keeping us down because he wants us to be seen as overachieving. And I think his managerial style is, if you start matching when you're normally expected to be exceeding expectations, when that becomes the norm, people find reasons to drag you down. And he knows this league, and he knows how the headlines are all, you know, that somebody's done badly, or you know, look at the headlines this season. You know, Arsenal are in disarray because of Wenger should be going, and there's three massive sides going down. There's unrest at West Ham. They like those kind of headlines because they attract clicks and they attract listeners and they attract viewers. So people don't want to hear about little old Burnley being top seven. They like it for a night, and the night we got into fourth in the Champions League, people say, oh, it's amazing, so good what they've achieved. But they're not interested in that in the long term. So I think Dyche is quite keen for us to not be seen as a side expected to be in the top seven every single season, because when we maybe finish 10th or 13th, the pressure comes on as a disappointment. And I think that's a very honest and a very savvy managerial side. So I'm disappointed in that respect, that I don't think his heart's in qualifying for Europe because of the added expectation levels that will come from the press and the added expectations that will come from the fans. And of course, then the strain on the resources. But from a fan perspective, so many of us never ever thought we'd see Burnley in Europe. And this could be our only chance. You don't know. You don't know what's going to happen next season. It's a horrible league. Look at where Southampton are this season. It's likely to be West Brom, Southampton and Stoke that go down. It could be us next year. You just don't know. So why not go for it? What's the point in pushing yourself up the table all season if you're not going to take advantage of the reward that comes at the end of it? And, you know, if we get into Europe, Sean, treat it as a pre-season friendly. You know, just treat it as a runaround. If we don't get through the qualifiers, fine. But don't lose out on the opportunity to at least get there for the fans. I think it would be an amazing reward for this season's effort for the players as well. So I've got a bit of a bugbear with Europe at the moment, and hopefully we'll get there, and hopefully Dyche will relax and not worry about it, and we might be able to enjoy some early August trips away to Europe somewhere.
Oh, I can tell you're all in on this Europe idea.
Did I not hide it very well?
No, I'm surprised by your pessimism on even maintaining seventh, to be honest. There's to me, only really Leicester who should be able to catch us with the run-ins we've got.
Yeah, it's Leicester I'm worried about.
I'm playing Leicester at home, which to me, I think we're likely to win.
Yeah, I think you're right. Just very quickly putting out of that. When I say I think seventh will be a hard ask, it's only because Leicester are breathing down our necks. They had a taste of it, you know, with the, when they got into the Champions League, and they'll want Europe again. We've got to play them. If we beat them, then yes, it's definitely ours. But I think it's genuinely going to hinge on that game. If we drop any points, they just don't look like they're dropping points at the moment, and they've got as comfortable or running as we do. So I think that's my only thing. I think they're just slightly more experienced than us. That's the only concern I've got.
Well, I'm going to be positive about something different. I think we'll get sick. I think we'll beat everyone put in front of us for the rest of the season. And I think Arsenal will slip up against Manchester United, which will be enough for us to secure sick. There you go. Last thing to talk about this week before we wrap things up. Watford away. Coming up next. Fancy our chances, Natalie?
I don't see why not. I think Watford haven't had the season that was expected of them. I think everybody assumed that those sort of 7th, 8th, 9th and 10th places would be the likes of Watford, Everton, West Ham, Southampton, you know, very much put Watford up there. They made some savvy signings in the summer. They took Andre Gray from us, who hasn't quite had the season, has he, that was expected of him. They've ended up sacking the manager. I think their problem this season came from the disruption when Silva was touted for the Everton job. And if you believe what was read in the press, and obviously I say that with a pinch of salt because we all know the garbage that's written about us at times, the reports very strongly were that you know, Everton were prepared to pay $10 million in compensation for Silva, and Silva wanted to go, and the Watford board said, "No, you're not having it." And after that, Silva's heart just kind of left, didn't he? They didn't win for ages, and he ended up getting himself sacked a couple of months later. So, and since then, they've really struggled to gain a bit of traction, I think, on this season. Now they're safe; they're not going to finish in the top 10, I don't think. Top 10, top 6, maybe. I don't think top 10. My God, what's wrong with me? I don't think they're going to, you know, do much more than they are now. So maybe they're kind of on the beach already. So in that sense, we've got more to play for with our European push. As James said, they're going for, they're going for sixth place. I mean, Watford start the game 9 points behind us. So they're comfortably clear of relegation. I'm actually saying that. They're not on 40 points yet. Do we think James 40 points is going to need to be the target for survival this season? I'm not sure it is.
I don't think so.
I think 36 might do it, actually.
I think anyone above
Huddersfield and Swansea. I think West Ham and above are safe.
I think West Ham are still in danger.
Well, do you think so?
Yeah.
Well, they're five points clear now.
I think, yeah, but...
with a game in hand.
Yeah, but you never know.
Yeah, Brighton on 34. For me, I feel like it's one. I think Stoke and West Brom are down, and it's one from Southampton, Palace, Huddersfield, Swansea. But anyway, so in that sense, I don't think Watford might be looking over the shoulder and want to get to 40 points, but I don't think they are. I don't think they're going to be too concerned that they're not safe. If we go out and play like we did at West Ham, second half, like we played at West Brom, then I can't say anything other than a comfortable win. That said, Watford have got a pretty good side. They've got goals in them, and on their day, they can beat anyone in this league if they wanted to. So it won't be an easy game. It sounds like a massive cliche, but it's going to be one of those awful games where I'm going to say that thing where I say we could get absolutely battered or we could win quite comfortably. And I honestly don't know which way it's going to go. As long as Andre doesn't score against us, then I'll be happy.
Setting the bar incredibly low there, Natalie. But I think we should beat Watford. Since they beat Chelsea quite comprehensively, they seem to have struggled to score a little bit, which I think will really play into our hands, considering we're not a team that really afford the opposition too many opportunities to score goals. So I think it'll be a tight one, but I think we will just edge it. And hopefully we do and can continue this push into the end of the season. And that's pretty much it for this week. So we'll be back, obviously, next week, hopefully talking about a win at Watford, continuing our fantastic away form this season. thanks as always to you, the listeners, for listening to the podcast. If you've got any feedback whatsoever, please give us an email, podcast@nonenever.net. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, both nonenever.net. And hopefully you'll be tuning in again next week to hear us talk about another win. I've been James Bird, and this has been the None and Ever podcast.